Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Bill with Solutions Today. How y'all doing? It's time to start up our monthly program, and concluding some of the earlier broadcasts where I've included, if you looked at the title, it's going along the lines of post traumatic brain injury functionality, and in terms of, you know, we go to the therapist, we learn how to deal with the issues. We come to terms with it. We create our coping strategies, and then it comes about the life. Then it comes about the time where we have to live our lives, whatever that may be, and what we want to desire. And what, if you list, you need to have some occupational significance, even if you're on disability, as that is what is needed. Even if you're on disabled and you can't work, you still have to have a purpose to get up, so we all have to have some occupational creativity within the context of our brain injury. And dealing with the initial issues where we had spasms of emotional issues, behavioral problems related to the brain injury, all sorts of psychological issues that we first have to deal with. Well, during a time, once you clear that out, sometimes with medication, sometimes without, then you got to get down to the fact you got to live. That's where occupational significance comes in, and that's where moving forward with what you want in life. Maybe you'll work again. I don't know in what form or fashion. There'll always be some remnants in a lot of cases where you have some of the skills you had prior to your injury, or you may not. And so when you ascertain your capabilities, I mean, there was one guy I had about a year ago, he dealt with where he didn't have the same skills he had before. He was a mathematician, and he was not able to do that anymore. And then there are others, some of them that are hosts that were in comas for years and have gone to do other things that are creative. I myself have done things post-injury that are nothing real related to my work career, but a lot of it is based on some of the skills I had. So we have things we want to do within still the context of your brain injury. At one time in working with a neuropsychologist, I myself had restrictions in the amount of up hours I could have. I had at one time caught up on my skills got a GED, went to college before my injury where I was taking pre-med courses. I revamped my skills. I revamped my writing ability because I used to write for work. And I went to proper English classes, improve the spelling, which was part of the pre-med courses, because in practical tests you have to spell all the words. And so you develop skills on writing. I took writing classes, even though I was in a sales environment where I ran companies and would write sales scripts, and very often they were related to that. So my writing was always tainted and sounded like commercials because I was used to doing that, because I had to write scripts, telemarketing scripts, sales scripts, jingles for sometimes when I worked for Sears Siding in the 80s. I'd write the commercials for the jingles they did on radio and stuff. So you develop different skills. And proper English kind of went on the way or the wayside when you write dialogue. And so, but anyway, so I did revamp that. But post-injury, one of the confrontations I had, I couldn't even have the energy. I would get exhausted, just to mention brain power and how much you had. I would get exhausted reading an email or typing one. It was such an arduous effort. I even later on, both with a cousin that lived here in Georgia and with a friend of mine who was a TBI survivor who had a very nice daughter who I always adored to this day, and I took English lessons and writing lessons with them to make sure to correct it. And both of them told me I didn't have a problem. As I gave them samples of my writing, they told me, one is a special ed teacher, said, we've got people in this class, because of the abbreviation on how they communicate text-wise, that can't put together a sentence. Same thing with the other one. And so I ended up practicing a lot on being part of stock forums and other things where I communicated through email. So it kind of smoothed out. Made much more smoother my reading capabilities when I did that, so I'm able to write pretty correctly now and make the edits when I have to, and there's always spell check. So that's one of the issues. So that was like a confrontation of having skills, developing skills, and then practicing where it was related to brain injury and where. But my brain injury definitely affected both with the exhaustion of reading and with the ability to what I was going to do in terms of higher functioning stuff. And you're left with what you can do in terms of higher functioning stuff. Some things you can, and that's where I use the expression functionality in terms of yin and yang, as I said in the part of this broadcast of the title. Because as you develop functionality in terms of your daily living, you come to terms, like I came to terms with the exhaustion, which still is a factor at times, and I come to terms with like emotional upheavals that people will sometimes just do as a natural cause of life, and sensitivity towards it, and you develop these, but you sometimes have discovered there are still, as I've become very functional in many areas. So what happens is people become deceived by me. Because, first of all, I talk well. I'm putting together a radio program here. And I'm now going to do essentially a talk on a specific subject for about an hour or more. And maybe take calls if some happen to call in or if it looks like it's okay. Or I may just do it because I want to implant this, because this is reflective in all of you. And I can only use my own experience. You're going to have to use the mental leap to relate it to your individual experience, because each TBI might have different areas that they're strong in and different areas they're weak in. So as you go along, you're confronted with great success. And I focus in. I'll give you the examples. I've expressed it before. I had a small amount of money given to me by my mom, and I have now invested it and used what I did since I was on disability at work. Now I'm on retirement. So I had to figure out what I could do. I worked for a bunch of years. I worked part-time, like 10 hours a month on either taking care of I was a company to an old man who was dying, who had a very younger wife. Very wealthy guy, and I took care of him for about a weekend a month, and I was paid very well, so that compensated because I needed the money at the time. I was just getting $800 a month Social Security. I needed a little extra income, and I'm limited because I can't work regular jobs because of the fatigue factor, which still is a factor. So I balance. So I learned how to balance within my restrictions. Very high functioning creative thing. I was very good with the man, gave him his dignity. I wasn't the typical caregiver. He wanted me there when he died. That was the biggest comment. And he gave me tons of money when he passed, made sure I got tons of money. His wife was very nice to me. He was a chemical engineer. I'm reasonably intelligent, and I gave him what the other caregivers couldn't give him. I gave him his dignity. And but needless to say, so that was one. Then I taught tennis because I have a lot of tennis skills. And it turns out some of the things I did later on became a rehabilitation centers now are across the country for tennis, for people with brain injury, for both the balance and some of the spatial and some of the balance issues and coordination and sight issues. It's a very good way, because when I first went on the tennis court, I'd see two tennis balls. So it's a very good way to get back your balance, get back your sight, your depth perception, so you're not seeing double, and also get back your hand-eye coordination, because you're actually practicing getting sharper and sharper. When I first went out there after playing high-level tennis, I would miss the ball. I'd see two, and I'd miss it. So those things were very helpful, because when I first went on the court, I literally fell on my rear end. It just happened to be I fell into that accidentally. And so then, since I have some sharpened skills, have done clinics for children, both with my own family and also with my HOA, I did two or three clinics at my apartment complex, did clinics for kids and adults at this complex where I live, my HOA or my townhome community. I was on the board, and I used to do clinics for some of the children. In other words, I'd have, as part of this, part of the what the HOA offered as a party, I'd teach kids how to play tennis, you know, and I'd have groups of 10, 12 kids, and I'd be able to drill them safe with safety. And I was proud, because when I developed these kids, I literally took one board member's young, I guess it would be her niece, and taught her how to serve. And she's like 8 years old. I literally got her to serve. And then there was another board member who had this little, cutest little redhead girl, 4 years old, and I got her to play. And I'll never forget it. And I just was and these kids would actually give me little gifts later on. I was given gifts by them. I can't tell you how that gifts I still keep are some of the most precious things I've ever gotten, to get a gift from a child because I taught her how to serve and I impinged in them a skill of the game is still something I value to this day whenever I feel low. Anyway, but so these are skills I had from my prior and I was able to do because I could do it for a few hours and then rest and I could do these things. So I taught tennis for money for a while. Well, once I found my townhome and my mother's estate settled, I had a little money. I didn't have the tennis people to teach anymore. And I decided what I was going to do is I was going to spend my time investing. And I've done that very successfully. I put myself in by doing research on what I needed to invest my money on, because I could do it sporadically. I was able to accomplish tremendous things in terms of finding the right stock to investing, the right, I bought some autographs that are very valuable by doing research, all of these things, including buying my townhome, which I researched no end, and I'm going to make money on that. And I'm hopefully on the stock, not only am I now comfortable, but at this point I might end up to be actually kind of wealthy, in which I'll have multi-six figures, not to be specific and stuff. And so that was another part of what my functionality, which is very impressive, and I'm proud of it, with the good Lord's help, of course. And then the third thing I picked is I took up guitar about 5 years ago. And I had a guitar. My mother had given me before she passed away, but I couldn't play it. And I might have known a few chords, but nothing in any structure musically, just sort of rum through, you know, G, D, you know, C, A, or something like that. I knew some three or four chords. And I'd strum some basic patterns. And so I didn't know how to play it. And at one time, I was hard of hearing. I got an operation a number of years ago, so my hearing was now at a functional level, including my left ear. I couldn't hear it. Now I can hear. So I picked it up, and so as an added thing, I took a few lessons, and I started to play, and I got good. I played a few cover songs, and then I started to write music. I've been writing songs and playing in public ever since. I also, at the time, because I'm Christian, I went to a church, which as part of their Bible reading, I would play music. They would play songs in between reading of the Bible. And so I got to practice all these religious songs that they were playing with, and learn them and play along with the band. I wasn't very good. I was a bit off, not as good as the guys were there. But all of a sudden, and I even played on some of their get-togethers where they had concerts for whole churches, 500 people. And within a few months of taking up the guitar, my introduction to playing live was I went up there, plugged my guitar in, and he said, on G, and there I was playing in front of people that quickly. And I just sort of strummed along with the band. And so then as I was working with these religious songs, which I sometimes find written kind of poorly because I do want to praise the Lord, but to do it 26 times is kind of isn't what I consider lyrically correct. I started writing songs there. I think the first song I wrote really was a little blues riff. I forget the name. I'll look at it. I can still play the song. I'm coming home because I thought me playing this music in the church, I was sort of coming home. So I wrote this song about coming home and talking to God as part of the bridge, and it was on a blues and funky riff, and these guys were tremendously writing these religious songs, was impressed with it. And then the next song I wrote is for my cousin, Faith, who has at that time, the horse has since been passed away. The second song I wrote while I was taking some lessons was a song about her horse. And her horse had this very unique name. It was named Bunkies. So I wrote a song called My Name is Bunkies. I'm just a horse, of course. And I just found this as a cute song, and I played it where I was doing it. I have a story about what I did with this later on. But anyway, it's sort of like I just wrote a song as if the horse was telling you about his day, eating his hay, taking a dump, riding with his keeper, and commenting about her weight and stuff like that. That was sort of a funny, campy song. And I liked it, and that was the end of that. And then from that point on, I started writing more and more songs. And that's the way I creatively do. I still took a few lessons, still did some covers. But all of a sudden, I started to develop the ability to play songs and play them publicly, either with my family or before COVID, I'd go to bars and play in certain open mics and all sorts of forums. I'd write a song, go play it live in front of an audience. Of where they'd comment and criticize it, or in front of other audiences. Support groups, I played in front of groups of 50, 100 people, some of the bands with the religious things and stuff like that. COVID kind of put the ice to it. I'd done a few Zoom meetings, I never liked it, and then I went, but now it looks like I may put together a little combo band and play with play in front of an audience where I can record some of my songs live. So that's what I did. So these are some of the positive, my investments, my creativity in finding good deals, my creativity in doing this. Well, that's the yang or the yin, depending upon what you define it, the positive and the negative. That's some of the positives. Wonderful, high-functioning stuff. But then I'm very often confronted where I have big roadblocks. And this week is one of them. As part of my other creativity, I'm going to be worth a considerable amount of money. I put together my will recently, and I put together contingency plans for the immediate. Eventually, I'm going to switch it from, say, a probate court to a, a probate court to a living trust, because it might be much more advantageous to avoid probate. But I needed to get something out because I wanted to make sure I have a sister, that she was considered, and I wanted to balance a good will, because I hadn't done one in 12 years and it was dated. And I wanted to make sure to account for the people I care about, family, immediate family, all of the people, their children, and also some close friends that I would like to leave something if something should happen to me in the immediate over the next year or two. I doubt that that's going to be the case. I'll be boring you for a long time, I promise. So I looked at that, and so I did that. I organized it well. I put it together, and I figured out how to do it without paying a lawyer, because he wanted to charge me $1,000 to do it. I didn't want to pay it. I had the money, but I just thought it was exorbitant for what I wanted to do for a year. So I managed to go to one of these companies that provide these structured will software, and I filled in all the, you have to do all the information and the statistical breakdown. And the goal for me with this will was very important, because the one thing I wanted to make sure to do was to make sure everybody was accounted. No one would feel bad. I didn't want to leave a document out there, and certainly not something that's going to be the basis for my living trust when I just dumped this will in. But this is the basis for it, and I wanted to make sure my sister, all the people around me, felt good about it. Okay, it was very important to me. I've seen instances both in my family, other parts of my family, and other places publicly where people do all sorts of hateful things, spiteful, or just inadvertently writing people out, and just terrible stuff. My bill is going to be one of anyone who's around will have a positive feeling when I'm gone. I don't want to leave a mess here. Anyway, so that was my feeling, and I don't want my mother's money to be treated in a nefarious way, how I'm going to use it, and that's very important to me. So that was done, and I was very successful at it. And now I'm setting up with a cousin. I created essentially a whole thing. I'm going to probably see the cousin this weekend, Super Bowl, and I now have templates where she can, whether I'm gone, but more importantly, if I should take a trip, she'll be able to pay my bills with a joint account. And I'm going to have my email set up so they'll all come to certain emails that we share, just the way we do a bank account. So everything would be done, and she's my executor. So I took care of this. Tremendous amount of effort, but it was worth it, and it'll be the basis of what I do when I change this into a living trust for good reasons. Anyway, but that's success. Now I'm also cleaning up some other, and I've then since discovered certain areas of my endeavors which are kind of difficult, in which I'm reaching that area, as we talk about with the brain injury. The positives are all great, but then there's these surprising areas where you reach a blank zone or a zone where you're incapable. And I'm going to share them with you. You know, I tend to have a very chaotic, I have all these creative things, but the organization, now I don't live dirty, my showers and my bathrooms are clean, but I literally can accumulate papers uncleaned all over the place, and I'm not very good at housework. Susie Homemaker, I am not. But the chaoticness and the amount of it is related to my brain injury, where I just don't keep track of things. I throw things all over the place. I stack mail. The organization level that I show in these other areas of my life are gone. And even the task of doing it is hugely difficult. During the time I had a heart surgery a couple of years ago, and when I came home, I was just into rehab. And I was so weak, you know, I was having people come over my house and literally walking me out the block down the street. And now I can play tennis for 3 hours and not really, other than a little soreness, and recover. Well, when at that point, my bills were just, I couldn't even watch them. They were just piled in bags, you know, the whole place. Looked like a bomb in it. So bad that when a policeman, when the water company, I didn't answer the door when they rang the bell because I thought it was a solicitor, and the water company's guys came here. They called the police when the police saw the house because they looked inside and they thought the place was ransacked. This is like 6 months ago. And goodness gracious, the police came with heads drawn when they saw me sitting there. I was taking my medications. It's in the morning, like 10 o'clock, and I'm sitting there in this mess, and they're thinking, I'm the thief that just ransacked the house. I had to calm the police down, and I said, excuse me, it's COVID. My driver's license is in my car. I keep it there. So I showed them my license, and the cop almost flipped because he saw I lived here. And then I told them the truth. I said, look, I had a heart. This is from my heart. I don't keep up with things. That was my excuse. The truth of the matter is, it's because of my TBI that's in this chaotic. Now, also, if you remember, I was talking about 2 years ago when I was recuperating from the heart surgery. I was very weak. I wasn't capable of taking care of it. So I had some family members come over here. And this shows you how difficult this is for me, and I'm still going through it. I've almost finished it. It's taken me all week, and I'm going to clean this place like it should be cleaned. I'm determined to do it. I've got garbage bags. They had a dumpster because the place, the HOA, every 6 months gets a dumpster, so I'm dumping bags of stuff out that I've accumulated. I'm shredding things. I'm cleaning up, cleaning the kitchen. I clean the floor. I'm slowly doing this. It's so hard for me. The truth of the matter is, the guy that can do all these other things that people would dream to think that you made a fortune in stock, I mean millions, and you can do all these creative, you can play music, you can organize a band, which I'm doing. I can do all these creative things, find things for people if they need it. I do research, I find it. All these problem-solving skills, investing in this, high-end investment that I decided was my only way to work. Because I'm disabled, I can't work, but yet I'm allowed to invest stocks. And as a matter of fact, it's one of the only things they'll let you do on disability. They don't count it. You know, they consider, if you work, they count it over a certain amount. I never made over it, but they don't count stock investing. That's considered not work. But if you do it correctly, it really is. But anyway, so that was my job, and that's a success. Well, in confronting this mess that I'm tackling, I'm confronting one of the many negative aspects of my brain injury. Because as I'm taking, it's taking me, it'll take me weeks to do. When I was in convalescence here in rehab, and my cousins came over different times, one of them at one time asked me what I wanted, and I wanted the place cleaned. Well, she knocked it off in an hour. Another time when I was in Bay, did a lot of major cleaning while she was helping with me with my medications, and she knocked a large section out in an hour. They could probably handle this mess in an hour's 45 minutes worth of work. It'll take me weeks. That's the difference. And these are probably, in both cases, these are ladies that run big houses, far more than my, you know, three-room townhome. And they have furniture and room and manage, and one of them has three kids who mess up all the time, constantly, yet she manages to maintain while she's homeschooling a house of all these kids, and you get there, and I'll go up there on Super Bowl Sunday, and I guarantee you the place is not going to be a mess. And she manages to do it without even thinking about it. It's not even a question. And so, but in my case, it becomes part of my debilitation. And, you know, I always was a little bit, but it's gotten such an extreme. And there's been other people with TBI that were worse than me, that the mess would accumulate so bad that they literally have rats in their house, because there was one guy, one of our members that was a TBI survivor, went to his house and the mother wanted to clean. And, you know, everyone was, look, well, he's just lazy. No, he's suffering from a disconnect where it's an area where it's very difficult. And I'm telling you, what other people would find difficult and extremely, I mean, if you ask these people that could clean my house, find me a stock to invest in that I can make money at, they wouldn't know what to do or where to go. But in my case, because of that, I function. And whatever it is, it becomes something. So what I'm doing is just forcing myself to incrementally take care of a little bit each day. I'm going to keep making another bag, another thing, just another bag. Clean it out. Don't worry if some thief finds my some advertisement from a bank. Who cares? I got rid of bags. I must have thrown out 10 bags of stuff because I don't want to live like this. And even though eventually I may find a bigger place and get a maid, I want to be able to do it. Takes me until hell freezes over. Excuse me, bad French. I'm going to determine to conquer this because it's such a weakness in me. And these get into very areas of occasional lapses that I have. There are times when I'm at a family gathering. One of the things that happens to me is the fatigue. You do this. So now I'm going to report next month how I managed. I think I'll be able to do it by the month's end, where I may take a trip and go to Asheville, see a friend of mine, and work out some skills tennis-wise with them. And but I'm slowly tackling. I still got rooms to do to finish up there, because I'm deciding I just want to do this and I want to be able to keep it within a range for a period of time. I want to work at it, organizing it, and keeping up enough so that I'm functional in this area. I don't like not being functional. The idea that the police could come here, knock on my door, and look at me and think because of the condition is so bad, they think the place has been ransacked as a sign. You need to do something about it. But again, and by the way, part of the effects of this, I felt despondent when I realized as I was getting into this, that how it depressed me. It reminded me of the misfunction when I was first injured, when I couldn't read an email without sleeping afterwards. Or I would be so structured and out of it, in the course of the email, I was forgetting how to spell my name. Because for someone that could be so high-functioning in other areas, most people would just counter it as just always just a slob. No, it's something else, something more. I had sloppy places, but not like this. And so when you realize these things, these are the areas where no matter how you function, and part of the reaction of people in your family, you know, when they see the functionality in other areas, they're often deceived by it because they don't see the other part. They don't see the other part in terms of that. I'll give you another, for instance, of it showing up, what I call the TBI block. Is when I got out of the hospital, I went up to the mountains a couple of times. And I finally had to tell one of my cousins that this is TBI related. I go for the family gathering, like I'm going to go Sunday. And then I start fading out towards the, you know, I play music, I'll sing songs for whatever, a half hour, and I'll do other things. And I'm engaging with each one, the kids and everything else. It's tremendously fun and enjoyable. That's why I wanted to go up there to see my cousin and her husband and her three kids, because I adore them. And they're my favorite company, and both in terms of the game, but also in terms of the kids are wonderful, wonderful to engage with, and they're wonderful. They got the same kind of sense of humor as me. But it will exhaust, probably going to go up later in the afternoon, so it might not be so bad. But on the Christmas and the Thanksgiving, when in 2019, after I got out of the hospital, it was reminded again. And there were two get-togethers, one on Thanksgiving and one on Christmas, just to give you an idea how bad I started to fade. And how when you fade, like the same blockage I face when I really am doing simple housework and accumulation of small amount that I never take care of because I just, it looks so like a mountain. Well, when I'm fatigued in terms of functionality from the get-together with the family, I started to fade out so bad that both times I got into automobile accidents in leaving. The first one, I really did something nice. Remember when I told you I wrote a song? One of the first songs I wrote was to my cousin. It was about her horse. Her horse was named Monkeys. It was one of the first songs I wrote 6 years ago, whatever it was. And it was a pleasant song where the horse is talking. Well, after I got out of the hospital in 2019, the horse had passed away. Well, I don't need if you know or if you explain. Horses are very important to people. And it becomes an attachment that is very close, that goes on for decades. And so I was thinking about it. I had just gotten out of the hospital. I was still weakened. I mean, I was in the hospital twice in the summer, so this was in September. So I had been out really 3 weeks. 3 weeks removed from having my chest cut open. So, yeah, because the second time I had they cut into my chest again to remove water from around my hand. So bad, where the pain was so bad, they actually gave me morphine. You know, I'm not a druggie in terms of painkillers, but this one, when I shifted the rib, the pain was so bad, they actually gave me the option. And since I was very easy with not taking morphine, they actually let me have the option to take it for a few days because they knew I wasn't pain pills and stuff throughout my recovery. So I went there, and I find out I'm out of the hospital. They were talking about a get-together. And all of a sudden, or I don't know, that was vague. It was in September, so it was not an official family get-together, but apparently our horse died. So I was trying to do what to do. Just to give you a diet, this is the my functioning side of me. That's why it's a good story. So I took the old song. I just got out of the hospital. I really hadn't played guitar in about 2 months because I couldn't play in the hospital. And so I went and I grabbed this old song, and the horse is dead. And so I worked for two. I think I found out on a Monday or a Tuesday, and we were supposed to go up on a Saturday. So I worked for two hard days and rewrote the song Monkeys. And in this case, I made it about him talking, but he was talking, but it was about his death. And in a positive way, because I wanted to make sure it was done in a way that was pleasing to my cousin, who I wanted to make a fuss over, because it was such an important day, since I'm inconsistent in giving my family gift. Because, by the way, all their kids, I couldn't keep up with it. I'd go crazy. So I tend to have a habit with them since they're originally cousins. I would always give gifts in sporadic way. So I said, let me make my gifts special at key moments in their life. And this was a key moment. So I made sure I wanted to make it important to comfort her because I know how strongly it was. So I wrote the song, and I'm well enough so that I planned on performing it in her barn, which was actually his stable. And I, you know, I hadn't played in a while, so I fine-tuned the song, and we ended up going up there. It was good to see everyone. I was weak and stayed, and sure enough, I write in what would have been his stall before he died in her new place in her barn. You know, we put together, filmed it, and I got, had my cousins, I actually had a musical idea. I told them to, you know, as a way to sound like a horse, and they were all there, 20 people. I did a few warm-up songs, and then I knocked off and sung the song, My Name is Bunkies, and it was essentially a song for his passing, to honor the horse, and to give some comfort to my cousin at a key point in her life. You know, who cares if I get gifts? This was important to her. And I got her chocolates just to make it special. And so this took a lot out of me. So then I'm getting together. We're all going around to eat. And I'm starting to fade. By the way, cleaning, you're not aware of these deficiencies. They kind of just sneak up on you like a cold, like that feeling of a little bit of sniffles, and later when you go to bed, by the time you wake your eyes, you realize you have a full fever and you're coughing. I don't know if it's corona, but something like that. Well, that's how these brain creeps issues creep up on you. All of a sudden, you just find yourself in the malfunction. And so I don't take account. So all of a sudden, I'm fading. Well, I decide to leave the property, and I go to a corner store. Now, apparently this is an area where this has happened a few times, but I am so out of it. My cousin's there waiting for me to guide me home, you know, off these dark country roads. I pull up into this popular, what's known as a particular name because it was run by someone named Beavers. Now I think it's just like a typical 7-Eleven or Chevron station. Anyway, so, but it's where everyone calls it Beavers, which is the old country general store was. So I'm driving in this, but she's, you know, driving with her truck with her husband, and she's waving me goodbye. As soon as I turn around, the next thing they and I know, I'm going into a 15-foot ditch. That was right there. There's no guardrails. It's an indication of my obliviousness. Yes, it's in the dark. Yes, other people have done it. But I count it. And, of course, they're all freaking because there I am smashing up a car like this, and I totaled the car because you don't go down rocks and stuff like that 15 feet without destroying, committing untold damage to an automobile. Anyway. So I checked to see that, you know, the stitches in my chest were still together. I had split my chest open, and I'm totally into standing in the parking lot. And but that is an indication. Well, I think them and me passed it off. I'd soon, as always, find a good car. I always find them good deals. I found another car, and you blow it off, right? Well, then Thanksgiving comes, okay, which is like 2 months after this. This was September, and then Thanksgiving, and then November. And I go there, and I'm at my aunt's house. It was last year she had a party because she sold the house. And the whole family is there. It's a very nice time. I ended up writing one of my best songs because they helped me. It was about a woman I met who I couldn't pursue, and that's the next subject I'm going to bring up because my brain injury is affecting my functionality in pursuing the opposite sex a little bit, because, and I want to find someone, so I'm trying to strategize around it, and that's one of the related, and I'll go into that too because it's important to me. And but anyway, so I met this woman at a writing group who I thought was wonderful. She was in the medical field. It was in the, like, November of 2019. And I ended up writing a song. I went back after I wrote the song in November. Like in January of that year, I saw her once more. She saw the song. I was going to ask the woman out. It was about her. And I was going to wait and perform it for her. And so she saw the song and even wrote, I love it. Anyway, needless to say. But what happened is COVID hit and she disappeared. I never could find her again. Maybe one day I'll run into Savannah. Anyway, I got a beautiful song on it. To me, it's my best written song. And anyway, so I am at the Thanksgiving get-together. We're writing the song. I had a wonderful time with the family. and I start to toast out. It's ready to go. It's getting late. I am out of it. I can't find things. I'm missing my cell phone. I'm disoriented. And I don't realize the brain injury is kicking in, and I want to drive back. And so this is how bad it was. I'm looking for all these things I can't find. Just totally disconnecting. As disconnecting I am when I looked at the pile of envelopes on the floor, and I can't deal with it. The guy that could play all the music, the guy that could put together the Bunky songs and perform it on cue within 3 or 4 days, and the guy who can find investments worth fortunes, teach people how to play tennis, can't even manage to pick up a mess on the floor or maintain some order. And or at this point, get out of my aunt's house. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm so oblivious. Like the other time when I went into a ditch at that point, by that time at night, I'm so toasted, I can't really do anything. So I go and I drive and I'm around her property. And I'm so funked out, I literally start the car, drive it around, put it in whatever gear I did, then get out of the car. I'm so funked up and I'm so funked out. I literally get out of the car, and then I hear a scream as my aunt's telling me the car is rolling and headed for my cousin's car. Fortunately, the only thing it did was a little bit of a scrape on both cars. My insurance took care of it, and I later on found somebody through my hairstylist to take care of it for $150. But that was another indication of the erosion of the mental aspects. Later on, this went on for a few more visits until this year I told my cousin, who had lost a horse, look, because I was at another gathering where people were starting to pull and poke at me late at night, and I finally had to tell my cousin, you can't do this to me. I can't start making decisions about who I'm going to go with, what I'm going to do. By this time, I'm exhausted. This is brain injury. If you want any proof, realize I went up there twice, and two times I totaled a car or got into a car wreck. Twice. All right, so there's an indication of it. So that's now planned for, and I have to plan that way. Myself, like the Super Bowl Sunday, I have to take into account how much rest I get before, how much I'm allowed so I can drive back comfortably and leave organized and stuff like that at the right time. Like put the stuff in the car in half. There'll be plenty of time. I'll bring my guitars and stuff. But I want to make sure that I, because this is going to be less taxing because there's only going to be a few family members there. Maybe a few drop by. Anyway, so I do that. And those are ways that these creep up. And the fatigue will creep up. Remember, there's areas that are going to stonewall you, where all of a sudden you're just not there. Or the particular endeavor you're attempting. Now, let me make sure you understand. These are my issues. I only know my issues. I'm aware of people with TBI who have other issues. Some of the things I do, for instance, at one time, I went and wrote a speech and performed it in front of the Shepherd Center. And I did it, and I got an award for it and all that stuff. It was wonderful, okay? Literally, wrote a whole speech, turned out to be a fantastic. Well, that's because it fits into my set. There are some people with TBI that would find that impossible to do. That would be their area. But yet there are other people with TBI who could be very neat in their house and not have issues with that kind of organization. And so the gaps are different, and they also are different in intensity, and they're in different areas. Now, also, there are some people with TBI who's instead of getting fatigued by creative, actually their governor is set on a higher speed. They don't stop. They're like people with ADD. They just keep going, like Energizer bunnies. So it depends on the individual. Now, I'm sharing my issues. Now, next one's going to be my how I go about relating to the opposite sex. And I'm going to plan other things, Corona did it. I used to go to these writing groups and playing music. I'm going to have to add a church in. But anyway, so in terms of my things, these are my things. I'm just mentioning two because I'm aware of them as they've happened now. One was the fatigue with the family business, and that translates into other things. The second is the housework, which has been an ongoing problem and increasing. And I'm trying to get through it. Remember, one of these family members could knock off my house in a couple of hours. It would look spotless. It takes me hours to do this stuff. And it will take me weeks to finally accomplish it. What would take someone an hour. That gives you how slow I am about it. But I'm going to determine that I do this, and I'm going to determine to put it in order, and I'm going to set it up in order and make it spotless, and then try to maintain it for my own self. Then eventually I'll get a maid, but still, I want to be able to know I have the capability of learning how to conquer this gap, like I'm conquering the issues with the family by taking precautions where I'm having my cousins maybe put my stuff in my car so I don't have to deal with it and get later into the evening where after, say, about 7, if I'm going to stay another 3 hours, it's understood that Bill's going to do a certain thing at a certain time, and the decisions will be made beforehand as not to do it because I may still stay another hours, but I'm really not ready to, at that point, make decisions. I have to make them when I'm able. Then, so that's coping strategies, and you deal with that, and I'll try to transfer that to other areas, which I do already. Then now, the next area, which is me, because I'm in active pursuit, and it's one of my things, I've gotten a bunch of these dating sites. I've had some miss success. I've had a few dates with them. And I'm also going to some, I'm going to add up, I'm going to these places, meet up. These things are going to increase for me with the lessening. And by the way, I do have some news on both updates on Corona, which we probably won't have to do, and much more, hopefully, and also some good information so that you get test stuff, freebie test stuff. Anyway, but I'll get to that before I close the program. So these are areas that have been eroded by Corona. And it's kind of good because I'm kind of moving into an area where I'm going to become financially able to do more things, maybe go on some cruises and stuff like this. But and so I'm going to increase the meetups, increase that. I'm probably also going to join a church that is turns out to be a church that I found a very good support group for with people with certain kinds of problems with their children, and this church is connected with that. And that organization that does that has turned out to be a godsend for people that have those issues, and it's connected with this church. I knew about it from a real estate agent. I think I went there once, and it looks a little modern. I've watched some of the therapy, so I'm looking there. Look, I'm going to make sure to get some good to talk to God there and be religious because I do believe in God and he's helped me. But in the meantime, I might also find someone that I can match up with as well. Now, those are more the structural problems of dating. Then it goes into, in meeting people, some of the things I have that I used to be much more sophisticated about before my injury. Is the TBI issues related to relating to people and perceptions, which are very keen when you're a thing. First of all, I'm not going to tell people on my actually opening profile page. I'm very honest about myself and my situation, but I don't go into detail about my TBI yet because I'm not going to tell someone up front about that. I just tell them my economic situation, you know, drug and disease free is always good, but I'm not going to tell my religion is good. I'm not going to tell, details. I'm going to wait to tell someone after you meet them. But in meeting and engaging, some of the symptoms of TBI are going to come up. It's one thing if I get a little bit apprehensive and paranoid with my family, which I still do sometimes. It's another who know it and understand it and have had experience for 10 years. It's not that these women I'm introducing to that are going to do this. I have to keep that within check. And you have to have, I do, I'm confident in my ability to offer some, but those are things that I never had to worry about before my injury, because I would have, what's the word, I would just be able to, I didn't have those kind of issues kicking around in my head. I was never a paranoid person. I moved to 5 different cities in my 20s or whatever it is, so I wasn't one to be paranoid about. People who are paranoid can't move into strange towns. I've done it a number of times anyway. So I have to come up with a formulation. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to make sure to just keep it on being personable, likable, inquisitive, but light. And I have to, what you should do as well, I have to isolate those feelings that of paranoia and stuff. Unlike my cousins and my close family here, I can't tell them, I'm fatigued. I can't tell them, by the way, you know, they're going to understand because they love me and their family. And so I can tell a cousin, by the way, I'm fading. I'm skitzing out here. We're going to have to, and automatically my cousin I mentioned that to made sure to pack my guitar up at the last gathering. It was so sweet. And she's talking calmly to me. And I realized in hindsight she was actually trying to help me and this stuff like that. So now that I told her, and she's more and more taking just by my little suggestion. Well, a prospective woman on a date is not going to do that. And so, and she'll think you're weird. Remember, if they saw my apartment, one of the reasons why I want to clean is potentially they may come here. If they saw my townhome, you know, they're going to make the same ascertaining that the water company guy did the cop, that it's either that or he's a slob. People have all sorts. So that's why I'm eliminating that and making sure I'm functionally capable of handling it and cleaning and keeping it. And that goes into the interpersonal stuff that I'm going to have to maintain a certain amount. And now I'm fortunate. I do have a personality. I can be fun to be with. I've got a lot of things going on in my life creatively to talk about. I'm interested in other people as I am with my family and caring and loving. But at the same time, I have to balance that. So I'm actually, it's almost like, and this is something new, it's almost like when you're ready to go out into the world without the TBI hat. Now, there are some people in the TBI world who are always in that world. I don't want to be that way. And now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to eventually tell someone with potential my condition. I will. But I'm going to make sure it's at a time when it's a little more appropriate. And so I have to develop a persona that's not dishonest, of course, but a persona that keeps in check some of those things. I have to be rested. I have to make sure to isolate those feelings that I have, that I can have even around my family at times, who are very understanding by this time about those things. And if I point out another area, like I did with a particular cousin, warning her about what's happening to me. I've done it on numerous occasions, and when I tell them that, and they look, they analyze it. It's not like I'm asking for a lot, but I'll tell things, right? And or even sometimes with one cousin, I remember she said something sarcastic, and I knew it was sarcastic, but that's the kind of relationship we have. We tell each other terrible things. I'll call her a horrible cook. She'll tell me she never wanted to cook with me. It's all part of her. Well, sometimes she mentioned something, and she's the one that's my executor. I'm very close to her. And she said something really nasty, and I told her, not nasty, but sarcastically nasty. That's part of the vernacular we have. And a few days later, I told her, I said, by the way, I went to a brain injury issue with that. I actually began to believe it. And she understood it. Well, that's, again, a cousin who I have a loving relationship like the other cousins I do. And these are family members who can understand these things. When you go out into the social world initially, you want to present enough of a case so that you're not a bibbling idiot. I don't want to be on a date with a woman in which we're bantering and she says something like my cousin did as part of her vernacular, like she says, you know, like one comment with this Super Bowl. I'll give you an example so you understand it. I tease her about her cooking. Now, she's actually a very good cook. But she likes the humor. She doesn't brag about it. You know, she does, but teases about it, but it's all tongue-in-cheek. She's actually a very good cook. But I tease her, you know, I'm going to come up with ribs so I don't have to eat it. And then she told me something nasty. She says, well, I wasn't going to cook me anyway. And I said, good, I'm glad. Well, vernacular. Well, that's part of the humorful, but just like the comment when months ago when I told her I started to take it seriously, that's the brain injury reacted. Well, in my case, in meeting a person, and I have to be careful because occasionally I have let it overflow into these newer relationships, and they're going to take it much differently. You understand? I don't want to be in a new relationship where their banter is there, and all of a sudden, I'm teasing the woman. I says, oh, yes, well, what are you, you're into clogs or something, who knows? And she says something sarcastic or humorful about me that's joking. And all of a sudden, I'm taking it seriously and getting paranoid. And that wouldn't go over well, okay? So I have to find a way to isolate it and control it like you should, so that when you face the world, you can at least function in this. And so these are my strategies, which occasionally, as I've been trying to pursue women, even online, I have found I can occasionally go into a brain injury area because I'm in it with someone I'm not familiar with, and then those things creep in. So my policy has been to not do that. I added into that another way I've learned to flow into the world a little easier that goes along this vein on how I can pursue. Now, of course, I'm going to tell the woman I'm pursuing if she gets into me, by the way, you're really dating a crazy lunatic, teamy, I said, okay. But anyway, but there's other ways I have done this in my life in terms of contact with people in the outside world. I've learned that it's better off to spend a little money and not get into the small micro arguments and you'll win the macro war. That is that you come up with a plan to compromise in order not to have a confrontation. So that's what I'm going to do when I'm in these pursuing these relationships, whether at church or wherever, or in the Kroger, is to make sure I keep those feelings I know are signals and keep them in check. And the way you do that is you avoid the confrontation. I'll give you an example how I did it in an interaction that started tense. Remember I told you about the car that was smacked up at my, a couple of years ago in my cousin's when I let the car roll into one of my cousins because I was so zapped out. I'm starting to flake out. Well, you don't want to do that in front of people. Well, I had the cement in front of my townhome pressure washed, and my car was double parked in front of my driveway, something I never do. Well, the lady who delivers the mail scraped the car where I had the painter, this guy that's the husband of one of my hairstylists, did for $150 and just, you know, painted it and, you know, fixed it, you know, did a little, you know, put a little putty in there and made it look brand new, you know, matched the paint up, white paint, and it was done. And so she scraped it, and I was a bit depressed. So I took her insurance and this and that, and she's getting in. We called the police. I was really doing it for protection, not because I really was worried about it. And I thought about it, and this created an episode. First of all, she's just a working person. Second of all, I can have it done again. And so she agreed. She was the one that did the act. So instead of making something negative, I decided the best thing to do, and this is how I'm going to handle the women when I'm in these areas where I may have to pass on what I perceive as a slight or a sarcastic comment, like the ones my cousin make in jest, which I should know is she's just joking because she's very supportive and loving to me. And this is part of our thing, but all of a sudden, when it hits you, I get into that brain injury world, you slip into it, all of a sudden, I think she's serious. She's not serious. It's the stupidest thing in the world. And it proves it to me. Well, neither is the woman I'm prospectively meeting right away saying, and I don't want to get up there and look at her and all of a sudden kill a potential someone I may really like to be with and by saying something stupid like, what do you mean by that? How dare you? And reacting to something that I should perceive as humor. And so what I did with this woman who was the mail deliverer, I decided, first of all, it's not worth it to me to get into a big battle over fixing $150 worth of work on my car. I don't want to get ahead. So I called her up, and instead of raising a big cane, I just said, look, I'll have it done. It's going to cost me $150. You give me a check for $175. I'll pay the other half, and we're done. She was the happiest woman in the world. So transferring that into how I will navigate meeting prospective women, other than keeping my place in order and maybe dressing a little bit better than my typical sneakers and holy T-shirts to go out and play tennis, is to make sure that I navigate the interpersonal. If I get fatigued or a little stressed, which happens when you're meeting someone new, even in the best of times, and I don't react to that. And that is by isolating it and remembering my conversation with my cousin, who is totally loving towards me and totally kind towards me and is never in a nature. There's nothing about her that would ever make a comment, except if it's in the joking and in jest. And I have to remind myself every time, because even if she is serious, it's not worth me confronting her on it. If she's serious and she's saying something nasty, guess what? It's not going to work anyway. What I want to make sure and do is not take a normal discourse in a stressful situation, and meeting someone new would be stressful for anybody, TBI or not, and then reacting to it and killing it because people perceive you like that. They're not going to want to be around you. Just the way people who think, if I'm flaking out and my place is a total, looks like I'm a junkie or a little, so bad the police are thinking I'm a thief in my own house, and the water people think it looks like it's been robbed. The guy was killed, and the thief is sitting there looking over it. If it's that bad, you don't want to make that impression upon people. And so that's how I'm going to navigate that. Now, it means I have to fine-tune it. And it's no different than the other coping strategies. And then finally, I want to discuss with you, this is my stuff. You're going to have other issues that you're going to have to confront. Either you're going to do it with a therapist, or you're going to do it with somebody else who has like-minded in a support group, similar issues. But it's an ongoing process in order to function. And by doing these things, we learn to do as strong as we can. And we have to remember, I can find somebody. I'm in a good position, despite my TBI, of an attractiveness. As a person, I don't think I'm unattractive. I'm not I'm not unpleasant as a person, especially if I keep some of these things in check as a coping strategies. And I've got a lot to offer. I have to remind myself, despite the difficulty that I am finding, I can make sure my house is in order. This is not unresolvable. Some of the other things I have done creatively are far more difficult. You tell someone that when they clean my house or find a stock that's worth a fortune, think of the difference. So those things, and you can look at other people, as I looked at my cousins, who have all sorts of houses that they maintain while they work and do all sorts of things. And the fact that they were able, within a half hour, to knock off whatever mess at that time, which ever since messed up again. So those things can be done. It might be difficult. It may take me, as it is now, probably 2 weeks to do. But it doesn't matter. I'll get it in order. And once it's in order, I'll practice a system of making sure I maintain it so it doesn't get too out of order. Then I'll allow myself to get a maid. But first, I have to do this for myself. And that's the same way as I'm dating. I'll just have to practice formatting, you know, how I dressed, how I meet. The same way I have now made alternate plans for family get-togethers so that I'm not caught at the last minute and freaking out and putting cars in ditches. You know, there's also safety involved. So you and your lives, because like I said, I relate my experience only because it's all I know. I know of some others, but remember, I'm talking theoretically. So I would, if I was you and you have concerns, you can check your functionality in certain areas and then come out with, like I mentioned, a few function areas where I have to function better in terms to function in the areas I want. One is dating. One is taking care of my house, which equals more dating because you don't want to bring someone to a sloppy house. And then two is the areas of organization in terms of these things. You have to transfer those things into your issues. Identify the areas you're weak as a TBI. So maybe the same as me, maybe different. Whether you have a lot of energy or very little, managing that helps in terms of functionality. Finding things, this is back to the positive, finding the areas where you want to use and then managing your time in a way that you can do them to the max, finding things that you could do in a limited amount of time. I found stock research. I could do it sporadically. I don't have to do it for 8 hours straight. I can do it a little here, a little there. Same thing with songwriting. Same thing with teaching tennis. That's it. I'll organize my housework out then, and I'm going to make sure to date and to make sure that I'm rested, I'm comforted, I feel good, things are balanced so that I can make a good presentation. And then using those coping strategies to isolate some of the excesses of my brain injury, which you could do, especially if you go out and you decide to get some form of community activity. Now, there are some people with TBI who follow a different path than me. There are some people in TBI brain injury who just exclusively say in areas like support groups where they're constantly just around people with TBI and they don't have the same kind of challenges. Now they go out into the world, but some of these people want to just tell everyone they're into TBI all the time, and that means people in the support groups, in the TBI community, or out of it. In my functionality, I'll tell people, like the guy I'm working with the guitar, finally told him, you know, I'm a TBI survivor. I'll tell people later on what I am. But initially, I don't want to do that. So same way I'm meeting perspective. I don't want to tell her that right away. I'll tell her as I go along. But some people prefer that. I prefer to face the world in my tennis endeavors. I'm going to be an alpha team. Now I'm going to play organized tennis with a team. I'm not going to tell them I have a brain injury. The ones I play where I play all the time, I don't tell them that. I keep it separate because I like to face the world without that. Now, I still have areas I'm doing this program. This is my time to talk about brain injury, and I'll have more guests, and I'll express the issues. But I want to talk and be creative with other things in other areas. You know, I want to talk music when I'm with a bunch of musicians to do music. I want to talk other things when I'm doing other things. I want to talk tennis when I'm playing tennis. I want to talk, I want to talk other things when I'm out in the world that I'm playing music or going to meetups about other things. I want to be creative in other areas. And I don't want to clog it with TBI-related conversation. And I want to discipline myself to function without having to tell that all the time. Now, occasionally I do. I'm not adverse to it. I'm proud of my functionality in it so far. You know, in some ways, that just as another positive related, in some ways I think I'm a better person because of my TBI, that I have actually grown in a tremendous way. And those are things that are, invaluable for long-range aspects. And they're just the kind of things to make sure that you, keep. And, you make sure to keep and, you have to kind of keep it in order, keep it, keep as much as you can keep it as perspective and as interesting as you possibly can. You can't settle on just being without resolving things. You have to pursue it. Another thing that's very important, and I'm going to church because mainly I want to meet the women, but let's not forget. And what's an important part is also that you want to make sure and not forget the good Lord. That's a very important part of this. That no matter how bad I am, and no matter how many times I've done it, laying down and discussing the good Lord is, and asking him to help you after you put in as much effort yourself can has been answered. I think I'm living proof of the miracle of God. And in any instance when I needed him, he's been there. And anyway, some updates. That's it. And, some updates and also some positives. A couple of updates on Corona. It's been very good. It seems like this particular fashion virus is not as serious as others, and it looks like it's fading away. I don't see it in the hospitals as much, and it looks like that it's becoming a non-issue. I don't see the hospitals as full. There's still some people. I personally got two Pfizer vaccines, the first and the second shot in the spring of last year, February and March, and then I got the booster shot last November. I thought I had a little fever or something like a month ago, and I thought it might have been related. And so I got a test at the Walgreens, and I canceled a bunch of doctor's appointments because I thought I was sick. I did the proper thing. I was negative in the test. And now then I found out, and this is something I'll share with you, and I may put it up on the site as well, is there is now a test that the White House is offering. Get your free at-home test. And by the way, my package arrived for every home in the U.S. Every home in the U.S. is eligible to order 4 free at-home COVID tests. Orders will usually ship in 7 to 12 days. Order your test now so you can have them when you need them. Now, the website is, it turns out the website is, I'll give you the website. The phone number for getting the test is 1-800-232-0233. That's 1-800-232-0233. And if you order a test, the website for the test is, to get to the site is www.covidtest.gov. And that's, again, www.covidtest, all one word, TEST.gov / and that'll take you to the site. COVIDtest.gov. Just put that in. If you don't have that, you need help placing it, you can call up. The 800 number is 1-800-232-0233. That's 1-800-232-0233. And that's COVIDtest.com. Also, some other updates that I'm looking at, because I do have I had a major heart operation in 2019. And that may be related to certain TBI injuries, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and heart failure, or heart attack where there's damage to the heart. I may actually apply for a trial. I don't know. I got to check if it's actually one that's apropos. But they are moving rather rapidly towards tests for stem cell. My doctor knows about it. There are certain trials that are happening. I think this may be in these areas. The heart definitely looked like it's something that may bear fruit. I have to check. I think the company that's involved in doing it commercially will do a clinical study on people with that are in heart failure that have used pumps for their heart. They're the most severe patients. And what does that mean? That means they'll be able to use stem cells, some form of treatment, where they'll be able to regenerate hearts up to 90%. Back to repair it, 90% of the damage. And so it's good for people with heart. It's breakthrough. And they also may be able to do it for people with type 1 diabetes. And in addition to that, to people that in some clinical studies, as a matter of fact, my neurologist told me, they did a clinical study on certain people that had brain injury where it regrouped certain stem cells, actually grew neural tissue. But he said it went nowhere. They did the study, so he doesn't know what happened to it. But these are areas they're working on. That doesn't mean that they're ready to start selling them tomorrow. And please do not go to the nefarious sites that, you know, in Mexico that are willing to inject you with stem cells. And the ones I'm paying attention that are earth-shattering are by reputable companies, reputable higher learning education centers and research centers that do clinical trials for FDA approval, so it's much more serious. It is getting serious. These are breakthroughs that are happening. And those are incredible. And that includes some of the stuff that they now have for Alzheimer's disease. So this is great hope, something I would look towards. And it's not surprising. There's been advances in all sorts of things. And for heart failure, for diabetes, the stem cells may be a game changer. They'll just rebuild from the cellular structure, the damaged to the pancreas, the heart, and then in some cases the brain, which is really good. You know, I'm not, you know, and stuff. And so these are things that are coming down the road. And if I do a clinical trial, I'll certainly tell you and stuff like that. And but it's time to remember that free test from the White House. Call them up, 1-800-232-0233. And that's covertest.gov, either one. Again, free test, four free tests. Why spend for them? And they send them in the mail. I got them. It's covertest.gov. And if you want to just call, you can call up 1-800-232-0233. And that's it. And we're looking for some good things. It's good that COVID is coming to a close. And I hope this has been helpful information. And I want to sign off with that. Over the next months, I'm going to have guests again, unless I come up with something in terms of another added to this topic. Or I have a net results, and you find out I'm dating wonderfully. And I will, either way, I'm going to give you the results of my taking care of my tasks, as I put it up as an example, so you'll know about my messy place being clean, and of course, all the dates I've had that have been wonderfully successful over the next month. I'm just kidding. I'll just start off with, I want to make sure to get through a few of them without anything, with isolating any kind of what I consider brain injury-related feelings that I shouldn't have at the wrong time. But anyway, I'm sure it will be good. But remember, you always do these things. Do the best you can. Put your best efforts. I stress it for me. I have to always add in and then ask for God's help to guide you through it. Hopefully that'll be something to help. And that's it. And remember to relay your experience to mine and stuff like that. I only had to use mine because that's the only thing I know. Anyway, I'm going to sign off. It's been a wonderful talk. I hope I imparted some wisdom and some information, and we'll soon check out. Until next time, which will be in March, we're going to make sure to wish you all a good spring. Things are going to look up. Hopefully, it'll be the last of the corona broadcast over the next months, and we'll have some interesting guests and stuff like that. Bill signing off. I'll see you next month. Until then, God bless, and please make sure you be safe, and please make sure you have a good time. Enjoy whenever you can. It's something to appreciate, life, and just make sure you learn how to live it for the best and the gift that God gave you in living. Bye for now, and make sure you have a happy, happy day. Talk to you soon. Ciao for now.